Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to After Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Mr. Bryce Castillo.
Hey, everybody. What's up, cool cats?
And Mr. Brian Brushwood.
Man, buying property is the hardest video game I ever played. I just got a quest that I'm going to have to ignore until after we do After Things.
Oh, man. Yeah, I use Robinhood for like buying stocks, but I'm not a day trader. Like I made that decision a while ago. Like, because one, it's irrational, but also stressful. But having that ability to
what is Robinhood?
It's a mobile stock trading app, and okay. They do free trades, right? It's usually
free trades. I really dig it. I'll send you a link. I'll get a credit. I dig it. So
yeah, they get people in because you know how they have like. If you share or if someone signs up with your link,
they give you real money to play with.
Well, and so what they do is we're going to give you a random free share of a stock. And they're like, it's set up in such a way where it's like, there's a list of that you might get. And there's some big name lists. There are some, you know, some big size ones like Apple. And there's some smaller. I think when I signed up with Sunbuns Code, I got a free share of Sirius Radio.
Right on.
About $5. Yeah. But yeah, it looks really nice and it's a pretty good stock trade. I think didn't they just get cryptocurrencies or no, they got futures or something.
Something like that. Yeah. And so since we're on the topic of this and we started the show, I'm going to make a little
no shame. I just got a text from Andrew Maine. Join Robinhood and we'll both get a stock like Apple, Ford, or Sprint for free.
No, use
make
mine.
Sure to use my link.
Well, yeah.
You know what? Here, I'm in. I'm gonna click your link.
I've never actually done that before, but I thought We had a conversation before in Weird Things. We talked about incomes, things like this, whatever. I'm going to make a statement, and some people will be like, nah, it's easy for you to say whatever like this. I'm an entertainer, right? And I don't know. Brian, you would understand this. Bryce, you have no idea. We know when you're a creative, you have a lot of ups and downs, a lot of unpredictability.
Sure.
I mean, we all know this is the three of us we live by. We know this. We've been, you know, Brian went from, hey, I have this, you know, secure job, you know, working for Dell, whatever. Yeah. And like, I'm going to become an entertainer. You know, it's like, is that Calliope music? The circus is calling. That's what I need to do. I have for most of my life, I have been self-employed. Most of my life, I've been self-employed. And most longest period of time working for somebody else, I worked for the James Rand Educational Foundation. But even then, I quickly went to part-time because I said, they only need me for the next amount of hours and I want to do other stuff too. I have always invested, even when I was at my worst economically, even when I had massive amounts of debt because I was involved in projects and stuff and my income had declined, whatever, I have always invested every single month. Sometimes it was only $5 a month, you know, sometimes it was more because I realized the habit was more important and then the starting point than the amount. And that has helped me out immensely. And investing doesn't mean you've got to start picking wild stocks. Just do like what's called like an index fund. Like there's like standard index funds that have an average rate of return 10% a year. It's better than picking mutual funds. It's better than most people picking stocks. Mm. Even that. And you can use apps like Acorns, which we talked about, which will round up. When you make a purchase, it'll like $1.20, it'll round up to the next nearest $2 and put 80 cents into an account. You can do an index fund there. My advice for this is like even where points where people are like, why are you doing this? Because it's like, man, if I order, you know, less fries, you know, if I don't order any soda this week or if I don't do this, that $10, $20. And I cannot tell you the number of times where I've been like, man, things are thin. I looked, oh, yeah, I put this money away here. I forgot about this. You know, like, oh, yeah. I have this going on here.
I definitely had that with Acorns. Like, I think I signed up for it not long after you had mentioned it on the show, Andrew. And you know, when tax time came around this year, I was able to look into it and I was like, oh, I had a nice little helpful bundle of money in this Acorns just because I had set it, and it was doing the roundups, and then I think it was set to like automatically put in an extra like $20 or $50 a month, which, you know, over a year was a nice amount of change. And it's that's the sort of thing where it was invisible to me. I had set it up, and I had, you can tell it like how aggressive you want it, you want your portfolio to be, and it, I did not see a lot of growth on it, but I was able, I was still putting money into it, and that money was being stored away safely.
The peace of mind that comes with that is super important. And I forgive me, I know I've told this story before, but it's been a good 5 years, so I'll tell a very shortened version of it. The biggest leap in my career was about year four after I quit my day job. I had solid product. I had started to work at colleges, and I realized, okay, if the show works in Texas and I could drive out to Louisiana, if I could fly, I could do it nationwide. And so after a year of doing that, I'm like, oh, my God, I've got all these showcases at local regional conferences. So I hired a full time booking agent. And it's great. He started loading up my fall. Unfortunately, I was paying him starting in January. So all the gigs were there in the fall. And by the time we got to this is what, 3 or 4 years into me having quit my day job. And at the beginning of the adventure, it was the busiest I was ever going to be, the most travel, the most shows. I owed about $50,000 on everything because I had been paying, you know, everyone but me. And I, but then I looked at the schedule and I ran all the numbers and I say, if every single one of these shows comes through, if I don't suffer an injury or have a car crash or miss a gig or whatever, if I'm able to spend the next 6 months working the hardest I've ever worked, let me run the numbers, then my Christmas present to me will be, I will be worth $0. Like, I will make it back to zero. And that was a deeply disheartening thing. And so while we were on the road, Bonnie was like, look, man, if you're going to make this work, you need to become more financially literate. Let's go and spend $100 more of money we don't have at B. Dalton Booksellers, because it was late 90s. We bought a bunch of books that had a reputation of being really good. And of course, my favorite among them was written in the early 20th century called The Richest Man in Babylon. And the core principle is a part of everything you earn is yours to keep. The idea is if every morning you put 10 eggs into a basket and every evening you take out 9 eggs, what happens? By the end of the month, you're overflowing with eggs in that basket. And so I re-ran the numbers and I said, well, okay, let's say 10% of everything I touch, because this is another point. In your lifetime, you will live a finite amount of time, and then you'll be dead and in the ground or burned up or mixed with lye and distributed in a capsule somewhere in space. And there will be an accounting. There will be some number of dollars that pass through your fingers in that lifetime. And if you resolve right now, today, that 10% of all that money that ever touches your fingers is reserved to go to work for you. They're all soldiers. Some of them will be good. Some of them will not be so good. But you make a promise that that one out of every $10 you ever touch goes into some account that and you'll make good bets. You'll make bad bets. But that's the difference between accumulating wealth and having an overflowing basket full of eggs. And specifically, the analogy they use is if you let's say you go to work and you cross a bridge every single day. If you resolve to every single day pick up one stone and throw it over off that bridge, then not that you're going to skip it a few days and then one day you're going to grab a whole handful of pebbles and throw it, but just as a matter of habit, every single time you're touching money, you're crossing that bridge, you're tossing that stone into that bucket that's going to help work.
Yeah, if you find yourself walking across the bridge and realize, oh, I forgot to do it today, you don't say, tomorrow I'll do two. No, you walk back
and you do it every single time. Yeah,
I loved that. That is a story I live by. And I after I kind of absorbed some of these things, I developed a very maybe perverse sense of focus and determination on certain things. But there are people, some people, a lot of artists listening to the show are like, man, like, I don't have money. Like, $5 a month. $5. Do it for develop the habit.
Right.
The habit is more important than the amount when you first start. Once you're in that automatic phase of, oh, yeah, every time I do this, because the hard part is if you say, why don't I just do it when I make a little, when I make a little more money, I'll do this. When I make a little more money, I'll do this. Wrong time, because then when you make more money, you're like, you know what? That Model S looks kind of cool, you know, and if I'm doing good, and then we work on a very basic level as far as how our brain thinks what it knows, like operant conditioning, like, you know, you all of a sudden you struggle. Now you have income. Either you all of a sudden make the assumption now this is the new normal, Or maybe the more healthy one is, no, this is an aberration. I'm going to be poor again. I better plan for that. And that's, you know, how to succeed. And, you know, those habits, if you look at some of the successful people in the world, you find out they did, like, you know, you find out, like again, I'll bring up Elon Musk. He was always doing these weird little side businesses. You know, he was doing side businesses when he was a kid and when he was a teenager to make money. And none of those was going to make him rich. But the habit of looking for business opportunities is what did it. So the habit is so important. And we talk about this growing economy. One of the things that can help you is to be a part of it, to have some ownership in the success and growth of these companies. Mm-hmm. Somebody points out in the chat room, your bank has a program when you make purchase something, it rounds to the account and adds it to your savings. Like in Bank of America, it's called Keep the Change.
Oh,
my
cool.
Advice, move that out of savings into look up best index funds. Managed funds suck. They don't earn much. Index funds are sort of, they take like the top 500 biggest companies, they invest in that. Over time, it's like considered arguably, like I think Milton Friedman said, it was like one of the greatest inventions ever. Or it was Warren Buffett, like one of the most brilliant inventions ever was the index fund. Because once you take, because the margins on it, every fund takes a percentage every year of what's in there. Like there's like Vanguard has this one index fund's 0.04%. It's a tiny, tiny thing because it's basically a robot does that. So yeah, don't mm-hmm. leave your money. If you're looking to save it, don't leave it. You know, put money in savings for like, oh my gosh, I need car repairs tomorrow. But savings will pay you 2 or 3%. Savings interest rates are still low. Index fund. But just get in the habit. Just start with saving.
Yeah. And I guess the coda to the story about me realizing the best I could hope for is to get back to zero. Mm-hmm. I read all those books and then redid it. And I realized, yes, it took me 3 more months to get out of debt. And it sucks. You know, being in debt sucks. So instead mm-hmm. of getting out of debt, you know, by Christmas, it wasn't until mid March that I got out of debt. But when I did get out of debt for the first time, I had $10,000 in a retirement account, you know, so it's like I got out of debt and had something to show for it, which the level of confidence that comes from that. And you know, I never noticed the change in my lifestyle. I mean, I noticed the mm-hmm. frustration that it took 3 months longer than I would have preferred to get back to zero. But even back to zero is a magical number where, you know, you suddenly have a war chest mm-hmm. for disasters. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you start focusing on like, okay, because then you start going from, I need to have a month's, you know, emergency income. Then you start, I need to have 3 months. And then you start saying, I want to get into a year's worth of income or this or that. And they're putting enough money away that's like, okay, if I get a tax hit, it's not going to materially affect me, you know, whatever. But so any point is, don't wait to start it. Even when you're broke and you're in debt, perfect time to start doing it. Perfect time to start building the habit.
Yeah, and that's the counterintuitive part, right? You would think that's the one time you can't possibly afford to pay yourself first. It is the most important time to start right. that habit.
Yep. Even yep. And like you were saying, if it's $5, if it's a dollar, if you can put it somewhere, then start doing it now.
Yeah.
Because then you treat it as future you money. You right. know, there's future you. It's future you money. It's this, or it's if you're gonna have kids or a family one day. It's house money, or it's this. Once you treat it as that, no, that belongs to this. It's not just there's a pile of one pile of money. It's like no, start breaking that, you know, money up into things, and then you know it's, you know, one of my favorite Elon Musk stories was Musk learned a lesson, which was he knew that he was no matter what after he you know sold PayPal and he was wealthy, he had already sold a previous company, Zip2, he knew that, okay, he could always sort of end up back on top again. And he had wealthy friends and stuff like that. And so he said, okay, what was most important to him at that point? At that point, once he had a sense of security, was building Tesla, building SpaceX. And there was a point at which he had borrowed everything he had. He put every single dollar of wealth he had into those companies to get them to survive, mm-hmm. sold his house, was living at his in-law's house to do this, and was borrowing money from friends. He'd been a 100 millionaire, you know, he'd been multi-millionaire, and he put everything into it. And it turned out pretty well. But the point was, is he was a guy that was always conscious of, you know, financially speaking, when do you take that risk, when don't you, et cetera. You know, and this was a guy that kind of went counter. I don't know what the reason I brought that up, but just the example of
you brought it up because it's a perfect unintentional segue to our question on after things.
Dun, sure. dun, dun.
We got a letter from James Harrison, friend of the show. He's written in before, I believe. And he asked this, do you guys believe that hard work makes you great or that people are just born with it? I've had this discussion with hobbyists and been getting increasingly frustrated. Hope you all can help with this discussion. And I think the answer is that in various ways, it's both, right? For various things.
Well, and also, I don't know what it is. Man, I would love to hear more about his increasing frustration because it sounds like he's got a opinion contrary to his friends and,
Well, you know, let's take it, like, what are the things that make someone great that they build up via hard work? And then what are the things that someone is born with to help put them ahead, right? Things that you can sort of learn and get into good grooves are good habits. We were just talking about good financial habits, right? Get it, like, train yourself to do it. Train yourself to use, like, Udemy and other skill sharing websites to train yourself, get into good habits. Put in the hard work, put in the sweat
so
time.
I'll give you an example, like, kind of, because there's the hard, smart work, harder work, whatever kind of thing. And I was having this conversation yesterday with a friend, and let's say I'm a magician. I'm a close-up magician. I say, you know, I want to be the greatest close-up magician in the world, and I'm going to do the cups and balls trick. And the cups, like cups, I'm going to use copper cups. I'm going to use copper cups, cups and balls. The ball disappears under one cup, appears under another one. And, but you know what? I need to have the best cups in the world. So I'm going to learn how to operate a lathe so I can spin and make my own copper cups. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to spend, you know, probably 30 hours learning how to operate a lathe. I'm going to spend 100 hours making the perfect cups or the perfect groove. So now I have the perfect cups for cups and balls. But you know what? The balls, the best balls are these little crocheted balls. I want to make my balls a little bigger. So you know what? I'm going to learn to crochet. So I can make my own balls for my cups and balls, make them the perfect size, fits in my palm, whatever. This is wonderful, okay? Now I need a close-up mat. I went to every carpet store, every material in the world, and I found the perfect close-up mat to do this on. I went to an expo to find this thing. I found this. Now I needed to find the right wood. I actually went down to South America, and I looked at actually teak trees, other sorts of, you know, forms of, you know, exotic woods, and I found the perfect wood to mount my close-up mat on. Now I need the perfect suit. Went to Italy.
Of course, you need a suit. Italy.
Yeah, I need a suit. Got to have a suit. Got to, I can't just go to like buy off the rack of material. I went to Italy, talked to a suit maker, tailor, had a wonderful suit made there, had a wonderfully tailored fit to me perfectly. I've put in the work, guys. But you know what? It didn't get any better. My right. You know what? Cubs and balls, I still get the same reaction. Didn't get any better. I put in the work.
You put in a lot of time and effort into the wrong thing. So, yeah. You made your materials good, but
look at these balls. Look at my balls. Well,
they're great crocheted balls.
They're shine on this cup. What are you saying?
James is in the chat right now, and he says that the people he speaks to, they think somebody is just born lucky as opposed to training yourself to be great at something. And in the great debate of nature versus nurture, the answer is both to some extent. Right. Certainly, you can
be born with advantages.
You can be born with faster reaction time. You can be born with a superior language processing part of your brain that makes you faster or whatever. But I believe hard work trumps natural gifts across the board.
Yeah, in most cases, I'd say yeah. Let's use Justin, who's not here. Justin's got a great voice. Justin has a funny voice. I've tested this. Justin can say just about anything and get a laugh. Okay. Mm-hmm. He could stand up at a movie theater and go, "Hey, it's on fire." And people are like, "Ha, he's hilarious." Okay.
Well, that one time he says, "Guys, I'm feeling really lonely. I would love some support." And then everyone just laughed at him.
Right.
It's hilarious.
Part of it is, if you break down like what makes for funny voices or entertaining, sort of, there is, he has the timbre, the things about his voice. Are when you look at like, oh, who are other funny comedians or people? He has that voice. He has that comedic sort of voice that works for that. Justin never trained it. Justin never spent any time trying to practice or try to work on it. It's just a thing he was born with. He was born. It's like somebody who's born good looking. You know, you just, you know, you can work out all you want, in, you know, but doesn't mean that you're going to be, you know, as good looking as, you know, whoever, insert famous, popular, Chris Hemsworth. Okay. You know, I can work out all I want. I'm not going to look like a Thor. It just ain't going to happen. Even his brother, you know, it's not going to happen. That being said, does it mean you can't be a great actor by training? Does it mean you can't be a great comedian if you weren't born of these qualities? There are a number of people, some of the best people in some fields were the outsiders, were the people that they said, no, that you don't have this. You don't have what it takes. And to Brian's point, they worked their asses off and they became an unconventional success in some ways because they became more aware of what it takes to be a success.
I might have mentioned this on After Things at some point, and one of these days I'm going to chase the so-called white rabbit of trying to find the footage of it. But in the mid-80s, I want to say there's like a Showtime featurette on probably Footloose or something, and it was Kevin Bacon being interviewed, and Kevin Bacon says, I'm not a gifted actor, so I just have to work harder than everyone else, and that's okay. And I thought that was remarkable for somebody in his position to just say like, no. I mean, it's cool. I mean, some people are really gifted and it just comes to them and they have that. I don't. So I just have to work harder than everyone else. And that really stuck with me. And every time I've encountered something that I'm bad at, you've heard me say this before, I just try to find a safe place to be bad so I could become good or figure out that my natural gifts don't take me in that direction. When I quit my day job working at Dell, it was a case of like, okay, if I want to get into computer video game designs and animation, what are the things you need? Well, you need, technical background, got it. You know, the ability to think in systems, got it. You want to have a passion for it, got it. And you also need the ability to focus tediously for extended periods of time. Like, I'm pretty sure I can do that. And they're like, well, what are your other natural gifts? Like, oh, I like telling jokes and being funny and talking in front of groups of people. Like, yeah, none of that matters for this. And it's like, well, I also like to travel. It's like, so what? That doesn't count. And then, after taking a tour of what I perceive my natural gifts and interests to be, I realized, well, you may not think magic is as cool as video games, but it really looks like your natural gifts say you should give magic a try. And it turned out to be the right call. So I guess there are two things. You land on the target. Did you land on the target because you were gifted with the things that it took to get there? Or did you land on the target because you were flexible on what target you wanted to land on? And instead you identified, what I want is something with a lot of autonomy that allows me to be creative, that plays to my natural gifts. Oh, I guess it happens to be magic. Would I have loved to have been a rock star, super famous instead? Sure, why not? That'd be great. But also I'm lousy at music. I have no timing and I don't have the patience for it. So instead I landed on a target that I do belong at.
Do you think if you wanted to be a video game designer or modeler more, you could have trained your habits and your behaviors in such a way that you were okay focusing on small details for a long time, okay not traveling, okay working, on front of a computer regularly? And this is getting into very hypothetical territory.
Yeah.
But do you think if that was a deep-seated desire to be that person,
yeah,
you could have taken the things that you are good at and are in that avenue, and the things that you're not good at, and worked further towards that?
Here's what
any landing spot is the sum of multiple vectors, not just direction.
I think where I would have ended up was in this alternate career path, I think that I would try to do 3D modeling and animation because that's what I really enjoyed doing. But I think in a million little ways, in whatever organization I was at, I would find myself, there'll be these little opportunities where somebody said, hey, we need somebody to meet with the client or with our rep from Autodesk so that we can find about, just go have lunch with them, find out what's in the 3.0 patch for 3D Studio Max and come back and tell the rest of us. Who wants to do it? I feel like, my hand would raise up and then I would do that and I would tell the rest of the gang and I would still be doing my job, but it would be just closer to my natural set of gifts. And then over a 20-year period, I could see myself getting, farther and farther to the more people-sided part of it, and then all of a sudden I find myself still part of the organization, still working in the field that I want to work on, but doing something that is more compatible with my natural gifts.
Yeah.
And that's often you find that, you want to get into a thing and you think a thing is just one set of skills. But then you look at your friends in the gaming industry who ended up running gaming companies. You know, they started off as teenagers who knew a lot about coding, and then they got into it, and then they expanded, and they started hiring coders, and then they didn't do as much coding anymore. They understood they'd develop the high level sort of aspects of what they want to do, and then basically, I could very easily see you being a guy running a company like Gearbox, because you know, like Randy, you know the games, you know that you know how to talk to coders, you know what's kind of what's involved with that sort of thing, and there's a point at which your skills, you know, are best not sitting in front of the computer doing the 3D model, but going and meeting that team and saying, how's this coming? What do we need? Whatever.
Well, and you know, like, that's actually something that I'm wrestling it with. And we've had some off the record conversations talking about how, like, my job is very different now than it was 5 years ago. 5 years mm-hmm. ago, it was still like, well, my job is to be the star and do whatever. But now, as we look to build, you know, a second successful YouTube channel, as we're looking to expand, you know, all of a sudden, it's much more important that I develop skills that previously I've been really bad about, like answering emails in a timely manner, making decisions and sticking with them, sticking to deadlines, not procrastinating and all that stuff. Stuff that is less important when you're living the high-flying, self-serving lifestyle of, you know, constantly jet-setting from city to city to city, showing up, doing your best 45 minutes, and then going on to another town. Those skills don't work in an organization as it grows beyond, and you have to virtualize that presence, and you have to do more of the you know, I have to sit down and write a document of saying, this is the voice of every Scam School episode. These are the key components. These are the do's and don'ts. Similar to, you know, that, 13 rules for Wile E. Coyote or whatever, you know, that, not Mel Blanc, Charles Schultz. No, not Charles Schultz. Who's the guy who wrote that? It doesn't matter. Anyway, they systematized it, right? Sure. They figured out, they took what was a private creative endeavor and they said, no, you write whatever script you want, but these are the rules for Wile E. Chuck Jones.
Chuck Jones, thank you.
So James is in the chat. He brought what his friend's argument is. Quote, so if I work hard, I could be the next Michael Jordan, which, like, none of us could be. But if you were a child and you really liked basketball, you could train very hard in basketball.
No, you can't. Guess what? LeBron James can't be Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan filled that job. Michael Jordan did a great job of being Michael Jordan. Now, if you want to be, okay, no, can I be a champion basketball player? You got to open that up. Muggsy Bogues cannot be Michael Jordan, but Muggsy Bogues could be Muggsy Bogues, okay?
But if you really wanted to be into basketball and you trained from a very young age, you could be a high-level basketball player, not
maybe
Michael Jordan.
I'm going to back up and say maybe not. I mean, takes a certain kind of genetics. Takes fast twitch fiber, whatever. Sure. It takes a certain kind of genetics. And if you do not have those genetics, you're not going to be the NBA. You will not be the NBA. Absolutely. I will say absolutely categorically, like, hey, I was born with cerebral palsy. Yeah, guess what? You're not going to be the NBA. Not in this world. It's not going to happen. Okay. So I'm going to say, like, yeah, there are certain things you can say. Yeah, if you choose this really, really, really specific thing, no, you're not going to hit it. You know, but if you say success, or maybe success in some form of athletics. So I'll give an example. Okay. One of the people I think is an amazing story, complicated now, but this is a guy that he likes soccer, played soccer, tried soccer, was really good at soccer, not maybe borderline, could have gone pro, but, you know, in like a European league, but would not have dominated the sport because he just didn't have the right build for it. Okay. Like skiing, was a really good skiing, could out ski most people, but could not quite. Wasn't able to go with, wanted to become like a champion skier, could not become a skier because just physically was limited there. Got into weightlifting and tried strongman competitions and was strong enough to win sort of local things, did not have the build to be a strongest man in the world. So he found the one little sport, the one sort of under-observed sort of little area. He said, you know what? This I can go do because I'll be I could probably be the best at that. And Arnold Schwarzenegger chose bodybuilding. And Arnold Schwarzenegger now is more famous than any skier we can name, any strongman, any soccer, just about any soccer player. You know, he became huge. And became an amazing success story. He had to find the one thing because he had the athletics. He was extremely athletic, but nothing. He realized, I'm still not going to be this, but he found this one sport that he could do, that it was a tiny sport. He made the sport bigger, and then when he left, it shrank.
You know, and what's interesting is from his perspective, it looked like he was looking at a menu of targets, and he just picked I'm not going to say the softest target, but a soft target where he's like, yeah, I perceive that there's not enough competitors in this field for it to be as robust. I feel, and to be honest, that's why I picked Magic, is because, you know, Magic, there just weren't very many magicians. It was not as competitive a tournament as it is to be an actor, a leading movie star, or, you know, a politician or any of that other stuff. I felt like this is something that I could start late, air quotes, at the age of 18 and be at the top of my game at, you know, 20 years down the road, and do well into my 60s and still be at the top of my game.
So James Harrison pulled me into this reference there. And I'm going to say to Magic, to Brian's point, same thing for me. As I looked around, I said, you know what? If I want to be an actor, I'd have to be a director because nobody else will cast me. I looked at Magic. I said, you know what? The people in Magic most of them aren't trying hard enough. Everybody I know who had a modicum of common sense, who tried hard, was doing really well. And I said, I'm going to make my goal TV show. And I said, if I apply enough intensity and effort to that, I probably can get that to that point and be able to do there. And so that was me saying, all right, let me choose a field there are a lot of people in it are competing, but they're not competing at the level of which they really could be or working. Or I would talk to other people working, and I'm like, why don't you read these magazines on this industry? Why don't you know who these people are? Why haven't you read how these budgets work? It's not hard to have more information about how these things are made. Came to writing. So James Harrison brings up, I guess his friends are really talking about writing or picking up writing. I never wrote a novel until 7 years ago. I didn't think I could finish a novel. I had no idea that I could do that. And I can tell you that 8 years ago, I could not. Years ago, I did not have it in me to sit down from start to finish and write 80 or 90,000 words. I was not capable of it. I had to train myself to be capable of it. And I had to do it from my own approach. I was not a person who's a natural diarist. I don't write every single day. I had to look and say, how will I do this? And as Brian talks about, as you develop these other skills, these other sets that other people may not even think about, I got really into outlining and breaking things down in structure. I made myself an extreme student of structure. Now, I teach this to people, you know, working in the industry out here who've been, you know, written like big hit movies and stuff. It's like I coach people on some of the stuff now because mm-hmm. I taught myself out of need such – I have to understand this. I can't just say I got it because some writers just naturally get it. So your friends are idiots. Your friends are idiots.
Okay? I would say to go back, like if we're trying to be in James's position and you have someone saying, could you, you know, if I worked hard, I could be the next Michael Jordan. You are a professional writer. Would you say in parallel to athleticism, you would be a Michael Jordan level? Like you still do well for yourself. You're still a professional writer.
You know, the Michael, and they say like, well, there's James Patterson, there's Stephen King, mm-hmm. there's Clive Cussler, there's John Grisham. There are all these different things, but guess what? You're not going to be the other person. You know, when David Copperfield got into Magic, he did not say, I want to be the next Doug Henning. He did not say, I want to be the next Blackstone. He carved his own niche for himself, and David became something, a phenomenon that was bigger than anybody else before him. Me, no, I'm not at those levels of those guys, but I'm also, you know, the thing too is like I got into this, I started taking writing seriously 7 years ago. In the span of that time, I also, you know, started my own Magic television series doing this. I also did a bunch of other things totally unrelated to writing. Writing was not my full-time gig. Writing was a part-time thing. It continues to be a part-time thing for me while I work on other stuff. But I managed to get the Thriller Award nomination. I managed to get the Edgar Award nomination. I managed to come very close to someone like the Edgar. Well, Patterson won the Edgar, and that's sort of what made his career. And I got the nomination for that. And it's like five finalists on that. So like I look at like, you know, for a thing that has been kind of a part-time kind of thing for me, it turned out really well. If I made it 100%, I wouldn't be where they are because that's changed. James Patterson's has to change how things work for him. I have to choose a new target to try to be.
So here's an interesting mashup of the question because it's presented as an either or. Either hard work makes you great or you're born with it.
Which I don't think any of us would say it's an either or.
Correct. But I would say there's one underneath the other. For example, I think that there might be a genetic component to the appetite for repeated failure that I have that other people don't have a taste for.
Brian loves failure.
What's that?
Brian loves failure.
Well, it certainly mm-hmm. seems to roll off my back better than a lot of other people. You know, I'm sure I've done performances that there are people in the audience thinking like I would eat a bullet rather than experience what this guy on stage is going through right now as I feel the seething hatred for this mismatch of what he's performing and what this audience is doing. And then meanwhile on stage, I happen to be all like, oh, this isn't going well at all. Whatever, show will be over and I'll be in a different state in about 24 hours. That's fine. You know, and in that regard, it's not like I decided to cause myself to be one way or the other. I just knew that having bad gigs was part of the price to pay to get to where I wanted to be.
100%. I mean, that was, you know, I applied a lot of my lessons before when I started writing. I was very lucky. My first year of writing, I had an amazing amount of success of going from, you know, self-published to publishing deals to, you know, hitting the top 10 best-selling authors in the United States, the UK, movie deals, all this stuff. But it's not because I wrote one book and I got lucky. It's because I said, man, I'm going to have to make a lot of mistakes. I'm just going to write a bunch of books. I wrote 10 books in that first 12, 14 months. I wrote 10 books because I knew I got to fail a lot. And I'm like, I don't want to spend 10 years failing. I want to get those failures out of the way while nobody's paying attention. Yep. And just get at it. And, you know, that was a way to do it. You know, people, man, like so many people live. I'm like, I don't want this to suck. Well, if you never finish it, good news, it won't suck. It won't exist, but you'll never get closer to it.
Something on my mind during this whole conversation, and I think it has been a good conversation, but I also think that we have an asterisk in that this is inside the vacuum outside of talking about genetic privilege. Right. I don't think three white guys talking about whether you're being born advantageous or not.
Sure.
This conversation is maybe separate from that discussion.
Well, I'm going to call BS on that. I will say that, yes, in TV, absolutely, I got opportunities there, whatever, because I fit a profile demographic. When you write a book, nobody knows who you are. Nobody knows who you are. Okay. And so you could be any gender, any race, whatever. All you do is you choose a name, you publish it, whatever. And that is the beautiful thing about it. Now you could say, oh, but I had these wonderful opportunities for people to teach me about this. Maybe, but then you can get into all these wonderful things. There's so many people. Literature is one of these places where we've had people from so many backgrounds from around the world that have done amazing, wonderful things. It's not dominated. You've got entire genres that they're like almost no, you know, males in it because it's dominated by other people, whatever. So like I think that certain cases, but there are some things where the playing field is so leveled that to pull the privilege card, I say BS.
No, what I'm saying is that our discussion has been separate from that. I don't. Okay. I wasn't chastising anybody. I was saying, okay.
Yeah, he was pointing out that there are places where it is not level and there is privilege,
and that we did not address that.
But this discussion has been outside of that. Outside of the interesting fact that you know, magic really is still waiting for its great female superstar. I'm convinced that the next magic superstar is going to be a lady, and I can't wait for it.
I don't know, because I remember back in the 90s, because David Copperfield was the height of success, and you'd have these conversations with people about like who's going to be next. And let me qualify this too. When you're getting into the world of publishing, you know, generally these do matter. Let me make that very, very clear. Once you're in a room with somebody else and they get to have their biases come into play, different story entirely, you know, and that's a big problem there is that, you know, I have probably had advantages I'm not even aware of, but like in a self-publishing world where you just upload it and nobody ever sees your face or knows who you are, it's a beautiful thing. Nobody in the internet knows you're a dog. But remember in the 90s is people were saying that like I had friends, we know mutual friends like, oh yeah, I think the next big famous person's going to be either going to be a black guy, it was going to be a woman or this or whatever. It would be great. The next two most famous magicians in the world were David Blaine, mm-hmm. another David, you know, from the New York, New Jersey area, and then Chris Angel. And it was neither of which. Now, it would be neat to have, you know, it would be neat to have more voices, more people doing it. It just didn't happen. And I got into like, well, what are the reasons for it? It's like out here in L.A., I know a lot of, you know, there are no more girl magicians here than anywhere else. But I see a lot of them, they get into it and then they go into some other field or whatever, because it is hard. And it is this, I mean, I've watched, you know, girls at the Magic Castle, like a deck of cards or whatever, who are really skilled. And guys are like, oh, let me show you. Take the cards from them and like start to show. It's like, you have no idea this girl can, you know, how great she is. And that's the problem here. And I watched it, like, I've seen it for with inside the community. I've seen it, you know, black magicians and stuff face perceptual, like I've watched, be like, oh, I don't think that's so-and-so, like, what? Cause this kid's from Detroit, or he sounds like he's from, you know, from the inner city. That's why you don't like him. That's why you've devalued this kid's skills. I see that. And that's a problem, you know, is it, and I would say, yes, it would be wonderful for this, but I see that why some people are getting pushed out of magic because of racism and gender bias and stuff.
Yeah, I guess also magic is one of those things where when you develop the skills to make it in magic, it opens up a lot of doors that are not in magic, and maybe mm-hmm. some that aren't quite so preachy about how you should and shouldn't, you know, make a red puff smooshy ball disappear.
Well, I can name a famous black magician we all know.
Yes?
Arsenio Hall.
Oh, I didn't know he did magic. Oh, that's fantastic.
Dove Act, everything.
Oh, that's
great.
There's
a great photo of Arsenio Hall. He was one of these people who was did magic, liked magic. And then if you look up Arsenio Hall magic, he had like Blackstone on a show once, and they showed the photo of Arsenio Hall. He's got like the doves and stuff. You're like, he was like full on, not like I learned a deck of cards. And another person. Hold on. Let me. Gosh, this guy just had this. He used to have the Comedy Central show. Close-up magician, really, really good close-up magician.
I don't know.
Name escapes me. But yeah, like, so I've known a couple people who are black who are into magic who then, you know, went into bigger, better things, you know?
Yeah.
Larry Wilmore.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, wow. I was just at the magic shop, you know, like 2 weeks ago, and he was there doing card trick stuff. You go to the magic house and stuff, like, yeah, he's a magician. You know, he's got serious magic skills. Oh, but cool. He's an example of somebody that's like, probably he chose the better path, you know?
Yeah.
You got any picks?
Sure. Lots of picks.
I mean, I brought it up before, and it won't be the first time I've done it. But again, this is your latest warning. If you haven't read it, read The Richest Man in Babylon. It's fantastic.
And someone was saying that that's a one of those Kindle Unlimited things right now, so you could
it's free
rent it for free or find it other places for free.
Or it's $1 for $2.99. You get the audiobook for $3. There, yeah. Check out the. Oh, I'm going to recommend the audiobook version of that.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, my audiobook of Acres of Diamonds, audiobook of Richest Man of Babylon. Acres of Diamonds is interesting too, but Richest Man of Babylon, that passage about the pebble on the bridge, that just crystallized so much for me about what was wrong with the way I did things. Of like, I'll make up for it tomorrow. I'll do more. I'll do three times as hard. And then you're like, you get to like, it's harder to do this. I'll get this. And then it's like you keep borrowing from the future.
And, you know, and on the flip side, it also, you know, that same lesson resonates with me when I'll think about, you know, how far I have to go on a certain health goal or a dietary goal or whatever. And then I find solace and it's like, well, I don't know about the future and I can't change anything about the past. But here's what I know. Today I did good. Today I, you know, threw that pebble off the bridge and I don't know. It feels good.
Can I do a really quick, funny sort of aside, though?
Sure.
A friend says, hey, I want you to come to this thing. And it was like it was a community college, and it was like some sort of motivational talk for community college students. It was actually like a video. You watch this guy was trying to do kind of like a poor man's Tony Robbins. And he had this logo. It was like TNT, today, not tomorrow, today, not tomorrow. And I remember watching this because it was like you watch this guy borrowed Og Mandino, other people's stuff, everything else we put into his own sort of talk. And like there was not an original thing there except for this. It says today, not tomorrow. So if you're going to make a pledge, I want you to promise yourself tonight at midnight, I am going to commit myself to X.
Oh, so the whole thing is today, not tomorrow, but literally it's defined as tomorrow, at the beginning tomorrow. Of tomorrow.
Excuse me.
Well, that's
have you
great.
Noticed, have you considered that you're talking about tomorrow now?
I am going to pick another video game, and this is kind of a weird one. So there's a
shocker.
there's a company out there that takes retro, like Neo. This is like a series of Neo Geo games mm-hmm. and reports them for modern consoles. And They just had a new port come out of this really weird game called Money Puzzle Exchanger. And it's kind of similar to like a puzzle puzzle bobble sort of game. You are like you have this game field of different denominations of coins.
Yeah.
And you pick up coins from lanes and move them into other lanes to like exchange them up. So you would take 5 10-cent coins and put them into a 50-cent coin, and 2 50-cent coins into a 100-cent coin, and 500 coins into a 500 coin, and then the 500 coins will like evaporate together.
Okay.
And it's a very weird it's a weird sort of puzzle action game, and I don't know that I'm any good at it, but but it's really interesting, and it's something kind of fast. There's like a little bit of an interesting speed element to it. So that's out now on the Switch. It's like $8. It's ACA Neo Geo Money Puzzle Exchanger.
Awesome. How did you stumble across this?
It's a website that I follow. They kind of like this game and said they've played it a few times. And so when this port came out, it was kind of a thing that people were sort of aware of. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Sweet. Guys, thank you very much for this discussion. It's always fun. And
yeah, keep those questions coming. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, the opinions I express are not necessarily my own. It's been after.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.